Hello, everybody, and welcome to Inspired Earth. I hope that you guys are having a great week. I have the beginnings of like a food episode, so I guess this is like a food part one to begin with, and then I have some pretty cool news as usual for the weekly show news updates, which we got to come up with some segment names or something. I realized because we're doing so many news shows every single week. And before we go into the food section, I'm just gonna rip off the band-aid with something here. The band-aid that we're gonna be ripping off is scientists want to build 62-mile-long curtains around Doomsday Glacier for a $50 billion Hail Mary to save it. And the only reason I'm including this, because it's kind of doomsday-ish, is because we had talked about the solar reflection piece out in space that they were talking about building for some stupendous amount of money to reflect part of the sun. And it just this seems more feasible than that, at least. Well, you know, you at least have to hear them out. So let's hear them out on this one. And it actually seems a little bit feasible. The latest strategy to try to save the planet is underwater curtains. John Moore, a glaciologist and geoengineering researcher at the University of Lapland, wants to install gigantic 62-mile-long underwater curtains to prevent warm water from reaching and melting glaciers, but he needs $50 billion to make it happen. And one of the main drivers of glacial melting is the flow of warm, salty water deep within the ocean. The warm currents lap against the sides of the Thwaites, pretty sure that's how you pronounce it, Thwaites, for example, melting away the thick ice that keeps this shelf's edge from collapsing. As oceans warm because of the climate crisis, these intruding currents are set to increasingly erode the Thwaites. I think that's how you pronounce it. Thwaites. Driving it closer to collapse. Moore and his colleagues are trying to figure out whether they could anchor curtains on the Amundsen seafloor to slow the melting. In theory, these curtains would block the flow of warm currents to the Thwaites to halt melting and give its ice shelf time to rethicken. And they have a picture here that basically shows that they will put some sort of founding section, they call it a foundation section, on the bottom of the seafloor, and then they will anchor the curtain to that, and it's like a curving maybe like a sail, you could almost call it, that like redirects the water over it, and then apparently it'll recirculate and come back towards the surface flow of colder and fresher water. So, protecting the bottom of the glacier. So, because that's where like a lot of this crazy chemistry happens that protects all of this, and the salinity of the ocean as well. This is like protecting this, the salt content that's part of this as well, not only the temperature. But he says further on here that any invention should be something that you can revert if you have second thoughts. While Moore and his colleagues are still decades away from implementing this technology to save the Thwaites, they're in the middle of testing prototypes on a smaller scale. And it's a $50 billion idea. And I think that is it. And on to the food section of today's episode, which is kind of funny because I had thought about doing a food episode before. Nutrition is insanely controversial and complicated. So naturally, we're going to have to talk about it on Inspired Earth. And we'll have that going on in the future. But for today, we have archaeologists discover 8,600-year-old bread at Kataliuk, which may be the oldest bread in the world. And it says that Kotaliyuk is noteworthy because it is the first human proto-cities to have been built that they know about. People made mud brick homes and navigated through ceiling doors and sidewalks that wound around the city's rooftops. That was really badly mistranslated. I had to like reform that sentence. I guess this is like a Turkish website or something. Archaeologists have discovered an oven structure in the area called Makan 66 around the largely destroyed oven, which contained handfuls of wheat, barley, pea seeds, and even more food. Analysis conducted at Nesetmen Urbank University Science and Technology determined that spongy residue was fermented bread from 6,600 BC. A head of excavation committee and Anadolu University faculty member associate told the AA correspondent that when archaeology is mentioned, structures, monuments come to mind. And they have pictures here. It looks about like what 8,600-year-old bread would look like, if you could imagine it. It's like a lump of coal or poo, kind of somewhere in between the two. But they said that that's apparently like super old sourdough that's still been fermenting this whole time. According to Turkan, the earliest known evidence of leavened bread comes from Egypt, while they find that Kotaliyuk predates all others, making it the world's oldest bread. We can say that this finds the finds from Kotaliyuk is the oldest bread in the world. It is the reduced version of loaf bread. It has a finger press center. It was not baked, but it was fermented and came to present day with the starches inside. There is no example similarly. Kotaliyuk was already the center of many firsts. So, and it says that this is from a World Heritage site. And, that was not easily translated, but it's very interesting regardless. And here we go with the nutrition that is, like I said, one of the most controversial things out there, but this should not be controversial. The symptoms of vitamin D toxicity can vary depending on the severity of the condition. So we're talking about vitamin D toxicity here because a man has died due to vitamin D consumption, and they are warning about the overconsumption of vitamin D. So how did this happen, and what do you have to look for? In its early stages, symptoms may cause nausea, vomiting, poor appetite, constipation, weakness, and weight loss. These symptoms may not be specific and can mimic other conditions, making diagnosis challenging. In more severe cases, excess vitamin D can lead to hypercalcemia, characterized by elevated levels of calcium in the blood. Symptoms of hypercalcemia may include confusion, disorientation, excessive thirst, frequent urination, and kidney damage. So you're pretty far gone at that point. But it says diagnosing vitamin D toxicity can often involve a combination of medical history, physical examination, and laboratory testing. Blood tests can measure serum levels of vitamin D and calcium to assess toxicity, and imaging of x-rays or bone density can be performed to evaluate bone health and assess signs for hypercalcemia. And it says here, so how much should you take? It says, when preventing vitamin D toxicity, it's essential to follow recommended dosage guidelines and avoid exceeding the upper limit intake set by health authorities. For most adults, the recommended dietary allowance for vitamin D ranges from 600 to 800 UI per day, or IU, excuse me, IU, daily units, with an upper limit of 4,000. IU per day to avoid toxicity. So from 600 to up to 4,000. It's also important to be cautious with fortified foods such as cod liver, and excessive consumption can contribute to vitamin D overload. And I just wanted to mention this because I've had people casually just mention that people should take 20,000 units of vitamin D per day, or 30,000, or 40, 50, 60,000. And I've literally heard people say that just casually. And you can see here where that might be a problem. And if you're going to be taking mass doses of vitamins, you should talk to your doctor first. So, I mean, at least call them and ask them first before you try any sort of anything, really, with when it comes to your health, I would say. But especially whenever you're talking about mass dosages, even vitamin C, even though it's like water soluble and everything, at least talk to your doctor, because it can have interactions of other stuff. Who knows if vitamin D can, but anyways, you'd be surprised at how many people take mass doses of vitamins, whether it be vitamin C or D. And it could be lethal, apparently, with vitamin D. I've never heard of somebody dying from vitamin D supplementation, but here we have somebody who has. He was from the UK, it says in the article. Here we have another food one. This one and the next one will both be food ones. And this is ground cinnamon sold at discount stores tainted with lead, FDA warns. I'm sure a lot of people had heard that they took like all the applesauce out, and that there was a bunch of applesauce that had lead in it. Well, apparently the investigation continued and the plot thickened, and that's not an applesauce joke. But ground cinnamon sold by U.S. discount retailers is contaminated with high levels of lead and should be discarded, federal health officials said Wednesday. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said cinnamon sold by stores including Dollar Tree and Family Dollar contained lead at levels that could be unsafe for people, particularly children, with prolonged exposure to the spice, and urged the suppliers to recall the products voluntarily. I believe most of them did. Cinnamon products included in the agency alert included La Fiesta brand, sold by La Superior and Super Mercados, Markham brand, MK brand, Swad brand, El Chilier brand, and Supreme Tradition, sold by Dollar Tree and Family Dollar. And you can look up all these brands and the stores that they're sold at. There's quite a number of dollar, I mean, this is like potentially tens of thousands of locations combined with all of those. Easily thousands of locations just with Dollar Tree and Family Dollar, but definitely tens of thousands of locations. It's a lot of cinnamon. Removing the ground cinnamon products in this alert from the market will prevent them from contributing to elevated amounts of lead in the diets of children. Consumers should not buy the products and should throw away any containers they have at home. Dollar Tree and Family Dollar have removed the cinnamon from their stores, a company spokesman said. Customers can return the products to the store for a refund. FDA officials launched what they call a targeted survey of cinnamon products sold in discounted stores after an October 2023 recall of lead-tainted cinnamon applesauce pouches that sickened nearly 500 children. That's really bad. Getting sick from lead as a kid is really, really bad. The ground cinnamon products in Wednesday's notice had lead levels of 2.3 to 3.4 parts per million, far lower than the puree pouches, which contained 2,270 parts per million to 5,100 parts per million of lead. It says no illnesses or health effects have been reported to the ground cinnamon that we know of, probably because it was a lot lower, which causes totally different symptoms, by the way. High doses of lead and low doses of lead, totally different symptoms. but it says there is no safe level of lead exposure for humans. Long-term exposure of lead can cause problems, especially in growing children, including learning disabilities, behavioral difficulties, and lower IQ. A lot of people talk about lead with the Roman Empire, that they had a lot of pipes with lead. They put lead in a lot of their drinking stuff. They didn't realize it was harmful. It's very plentiful. It's easy to mine. It's malleable to where you can put it into shapes really easily. You can put it as a filler. It's just, it's like really handy if you don't know that it causes brain damage, like severe brain damage and organ damage, other stuff. I mean, that's just what everybody goes to with the brain. Because I mean, nobody wants your brain to be destroyed, but it will do other stuff too. But my point is that so Rome got super advanced and had this aqueduct system, and they were making glass everywhere and all this, like all sorts of materials that had lead in it. And then they had like a decline, obviously. They collapsed, and that came from a lot of reasons. But one has to ask yourself, if they were all brain damaged and that was part of the reasons they were making bad decisions in their ruling class, especially because I think the ruling class were like one of the ones that were particularly affected by that. I don't know, I'd have to double check on that one, but regardless, as a society, they'd all be affected by it because it's through the water. So, and if it's all causing behavioral difficulties and IQ problems, they can't make decisions. They're all fighting with each other. They can't cooperate. And it makes you like ask about what's going on now. With Flint, Michigan was just like the beginning of it. But yeah, like you should really look into testing your water, what water you're using, and the foods you're using. And on this note, before we carry on with the article, I'll just say that this cinnamon is not the, if you care about not ingesting heavy metals, cinnamon is not the only thing that you should be looking out for. Chocolate, I have bad news about chocolate. I know that probably a lot of people don't want to hear that, but there have been a lot of stuff with chocolate. It's different types of metals and stuff, and you should look up those brands and find that up yourself. But it's not just chocolate, also turmeric, ginger, a lot of the roots. Part of that is how we make traditional medicines, and how we make all of our medicine today is through discoveries of plants, like Tylenol. Acetaminophen had been discovered through like a shrub or like a ground plant. I don't think it was a shrub. I think it was like a fern. That was what I was looking at. It was a fern or something like that. But garlic has all these helpful properties, ginger, turmeric, all great stuff, but they have to be grown where they're properly taken care of. Because a lot of the places are unfortunately not taking care of the area, and that carries over into the stuff that's grown there. So that's how most likely this got in there, if not from factory equipment of grinding it. That could be a potential thing, like pastes and sealants and like just parts of the industrial process of processing the cinnamon, that could be a potential part of it. But from the source, from the get-go, it could be contaminated. It doesn't even matter. From there, it could get even worse. So it's really important to look into your spices and stuff. And if you're taking supplements, like this goes back to the whole supplementation thing that we were just talking about with the vitamin D, that you could be even more susceptible to this because you're just taking straight up root. Like let's say hypothetically you're taking garlic or turmeric pills. Well, where are they sourcing that stuff from? And if it's concentrated and then you're taking like bigger doses, you're getting even more concentrated doses of heavy metals because it's getting even more processed. Like, the more processed it goes through, the more chances it has of getting contaminated. That's why it's important of checking all of this stuff. Like, a lot of people, and I won't say names because there's too many of them. A lot of, like, health supplement people have been caught with having lead in their stuff as well, like protein powders and just health supplements in general. So check out your stuff, research it, find out companies that are ethical with whatever supplements you're trying to take as best you can. And maybe we can look into that later. I know other people will specialize in that. There are people that will specialize in that and can tell you all sorts of brands that are better and not. You just have to look for it online. So if you're interested in that, you can find it. But it does say that the FDA monitors foods for lead levels, but the U.S. government doesn't broadly limit lead in food products. The agency sent a letter to all cinnamon manufacturer, processors, distributors, and facility operators in the U.S. reminding them that they're required to prevent contamination from chemical hazards in food, including spices. And here we are with the last food one, and it's the PFAS, PFAS forever chemicals, to be officially removed from food packaging, says the FDA. Finally, right? Hallelujah. How many years has this been going on? It says that the PFAS are a diverse group of synthetic chemicals that resist water, oil, heat, and stains, which is why they've historically been used in a wide variety of products, including food packaging, household cleaners, and nonstick cookware. PFAS are super durable chemicals that can take years to break down, hence why they're often called forever chemicals. Once discarded, PFAS can leak into the environment as they slowly break down, accumulating into the soil, rivers, and lakes. The chemicals can also enter the body when people consume water or food that's been exposed to the chemicals, during production of packaging, or when they breathe in dust painted with PFAS. They can be accumulated in a person's blood and breast milk. Numerous studies have demonstrated that potential health effects from being exposed to different PFAS. For example, chemicals have linked disruptions in the immune system, weight gain, decreased fertility in a mixture of animal and human studies, as well as cell-based research. The FDA February announcement is several years in the making. As an initial step in 2020, the agency announced that it was working with manufacturers to voluntarily phase out the use of certain PFAS in food chemical packaging, such as greaseproofing agents on paper and paperboard products. The goal was to phase these products out within 3 years. The FDA's announcement marks it a huge win for the public. So, that it says that also that it comes from the food that you're eating as well. However, food packaging is the main way people are exposed to PFAS through their diets. There may also be other sources of PFAS in our environment that I feel like they're not easily as quantifiable, not easily as measurable. So there's not as much attention on that. I think it's way worse than we're realizing. But these include drinking water and meat and dairy products, she said, since livestock and poultry can be exposed to PFAS in a variety of ways during production. Again, it could take over 18 months for leftover stocks of PFAS-containing food packaging to be removed from the market. In the meantime, the FDA will continue to conduct research and update our evaluations using up-to-date science and ensure that our risk determinations continue to be accurate. So the one thing I'll add here that they don't add, and I'm not sure why they didn't add it. It could be like a political thing. I guess not a lot of people want to know about this or want people to know about it. But the PFAS also come from our firefighting equipment, like the foam that they use to put out planes, fires, and sometimes it's like preemptively. So there might not even be a fire, and they'll just spray it all over the runway just to like make sure that everything's going to be okay, which is like they're trying to save lives, but this stuff goes into the water and it runs off into the rivers. Like I've heard estimates with the Hudson River. I'm pretty sure it was the Hudson. It might not be, but a river next to an airport that was in the Northeast, I believe. And it was just thoroughly contaminated from the airport. And like every time they landed, they would wash it all straight into the river. So taking it out of our food stuff is great, but the containers, like, that's great, but it's still going to be in the food. And that's what people still need to realize. We're slowly getting there, but it's one of those things that we have to just slowly raise awareness about, and it's like a journey in educating people, getting the politicians to do something about it. And yeah, we'll move on. We'll be right back.